Hey everyone, welcome to the Celebrate Recovery Podcast. My name is Johnny and I'm a believer who struggles with alcoholism. This is the first in a series of Q&A podcasts where Bob, Tina, and I sat around a table and we answered a bunch of questions we've gotten while we've been on the road doing advanced leadership training seminars. What you're going to hear is unedited, it's off the cuff, it's fun stuff, it's just our thoughts and feelings about what it means to lead a Celebrate Recovery ministry and some practical questions. You're also going to hear from Josh Griffin today. Josh is the high school ministry pastor here at Saddleback, and around 16 minutes or so, how do I put this nicely? Well, he interrupted us, and he just kind of came in, but he's going to talk a little bit about life hurts, God heals. This is fun stuff, and with that, I hope you enjoy this Q&A podcast.
All right, if your step study gets too large before the third step, or I think they need, you know, fourth step principle there, like around 20 people, is it okay to go ahead and close it? Bob, what do you think?
I think for us, we've had several groups that have gotten, to that size where it's been to the point where we felt like we had to close it, and we did close it before the second workbook, and at the same time as we're getting ready to close that group, we would actually begin planning and preparing to open up that new group for somebody to go to, so that we always had a new group for somebody to step into. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like there is a point where it can get to be too big, and there is a point where you do need to close it down. I know we've done some huge groups, you know, here at Saddleback in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Tina, I think, has even led, and Carrie's led a few of those.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, here, typically, it's, you know, if your group participation exceeds 20 people, or you reach step four, whichever comes first, is when you close your group. So if your group exceeds over 20 people, you haven't started step four yet, then we certainly do recommend closing it with the mindset that you are working towards getting another step for the group started. And certainly before starting step four, your group should be officially closed to newcomers.
Okay, this isn't a question that we received, but it's something that kind of, talking about this, I started thinking about. When we close a group, let's say 20, we close a group of 20 people. What do you think the average graduation, let's say, of a group is? If we start with 20 people, we go through the step, you know, we go through all the steps and principles together. Bob, out of 20 guys in a group, how many do you think finish?
I think on average, from my experience, it's been about 50%.
Okay.
Sometimes a little higher.
Uh-huh.
Not too much lower than that, though, but on average about 50%. But we've seen some groups lately at more like 60 or 70%
okay.
finishing, and
mm-hmm.
I think that's a good indication. I think it's leadership
mm-hmm.
that's really been strong at connecting with the guys in the group and, you know, making sure that they're showing up. If they're not showing up, they're checking with them, why aren't you there?
Yeah.
And I think that's helped increase
yeah.
that finishing number.
Tina, what about you?
Yeah,
what do you
I agree. Those numbers apply here just as well. 50%. You'll retain 50%. And as leadership become more confident
mm-hmm.
in their leadership, maybe this is their second step to the group they're about to lead, then, yeah, I see it going from 60 to 70%
okay.
in retention.
The reason I want to bring that up is that I think when we go on the road and do some of our one days, our ALT training, and certainly at the summit, people will come up and they'll say, oh, man, I started a step study and only, you know, 20 guys and only 10 finished, and they feel like they failed.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I love being able to say, yeah, welcome to the team. You know what I mean?
Right.
People drop out. Recovery is hard.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and I think Celebrate Recovery is simple.
Mm-hmm.
I think working the steps and the principles is a simple thing to do. But recovery is hard.
That's right.
Looking at our stuff, looking at our junk is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are going to drop out of step studies. You know, we can do everything we can as leaders to try to stop that from happening, but it's going to happen. And so I just want to kind of let people know that happens here at Saddleback. Bob, it happens for you. You know, it happens for all of us at different
mm-hmm.
in our group. So,
and it's not a reflection off the leader on who stays and who doesn't stay.
Right.
You know, and so my encouragement that leaders don't take ownership of someone else's decision not to continue.
And you said, Tina, you said something in the last ALT we were at together that really was, I thought, pretty profound.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a point when you went from talking about leading step study groups, and you said, rather than let the group lead me, I led the group.
I started
mm-hmm.
leading the group.
And when you said that, something clicked in me, and I
mm-hmm.
thought, you know what, that's the difference maker right there.
That's the difference.
If I allow the group to lead me, if I allow the group to be that guiding force for what's going to happen there,
mm-hmm.
then chances are it is going to get off track.
Mm-hmm.
But if I lead the group, then I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do to keep it on track, to keep it focused, to keep it moving forward. Then if somebody drops out, I can say, you know what, maybe it wasn't their time.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe they weren't ready.
Yeah.
All right, next question. Do you suggest a phone list for open share groups or just for step study groups? Tina, what about you?
I recommend them for both groups. Within the group, first name, contact number, and an email address. Outside of that, in the group meetings. So for your open share groups, in most cases, they're recovery specific. And so it's an awesome opportunity for the newcomer to look at that phone list and choose potential accountability partners or sponsor. Step study groups, it's very vital in that you, as you begin to bond with the group, with your group members in step study group. So yes, both in both groups, you'll want to maintain a phone list.
And that's up to the people in the group whether or not they include themselves on the list.
Yeah, I think so, definitely, especially an open share group. When someone joins a Step City group, they're really saying that they're ready to participate at all levels. And if someone doesn't want to be on the phone list in a Step City group, I would certainly try to find out why, what the particular reason is. Of course, we would respect their decision, and maybe they have, a good reason.
Yeah.
But if it's... it really depends on the reason. Yeah. But I think that open share group, definitely that's much more optional because people come and go in open share groups.
And one of the things we've also mentioned is suggesting not to put email addresses.
Yeah.
On the, make it just a phone list.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've actually had groups over the years that had an email list as well.
Mm.
And then there was a disagreement in the group or somebody got upset by something and boom, there's all these email blasts going around
right.
with gossip in them and stuff that's
there
going on. It's easy to click.
Right.
It's hard to pick up the phone.
Right. And if you did have the email list on there, because most of our groups do include that, there has to be email etiquette.
Mm.
The proper usage.
Well,
and you just jot that down on the email list that you hand out in your group that that caption would be there.
Okay, but that brings me up to an interesting point, though,
okay?
Because I look at phone lists, and I know how much they've helped me to be able to call the guys in my group when I need it.
Mm-hmm.
I also know how dangerous they can be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I kind of, like when somebody talks about phone lists, to be honest with you, I get a little nervous because I think... the first thing I think of is, can I leave a message for this person on the phone list? Does their spouse know they're in recovery?
Mm-hmm.
Is this guy working on stuff that he doesn't want his wife to know he's working on yet? He's not there yet. Or would it be a bad thing if I said, hey, it's Johnny from Celebrate Recovery,
Right.
The second thing I think of is, who else is going to have my number?
Mm-hmm.
The guys in my group, I'm fine having my number. But there are people in our ministry who I wouldn't want to have my number. Tina, we get phone calls here every day from people that we're glad only have our office number.
That's right.
And so there's a few things that just kind of when I think of phone lists, I get a little nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess my point is that, is somebody going to start selling Mary Kay products and his wife is going to get my phone number to talk to my wife?
Uh-huh.
About, well, here's a list of people. Yeah, call the people on this list and see if they'll buy. It's sort of like the group guidelines almost kind of by extension have to live over that phone list in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Obviously not crosstalk and that stuff, but we need to always keep in mind that the person on the other end of the line may not want everyone in their world to know.
Right.
The three of us, we go out. Somebody says they should celebrate recovery, we love it.
Right.
We're not ashamed of it. We're not afraid of it. We're proud of what we're doing and that we're a part of this ministry. Not everyone is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that when we all began in Celebrate Recovery, we probably didn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
That we wanted everyone to know what was going on in our lives.
Right.
So I just think of phone calls. I just think of,
And that's one of the things that we actually clarify when we do our phone list. Somebody will ask, well, what number should I put down? Whichever number you want to receive phone calls at.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're putting it on the list, you're saying that you're okay to receive phone calls at that number.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, fortunately, most people have a cell phone that goes right to them.
Right.
So most of the time it's going to go to that.
But
we do clarify that because we don't want to put a number down where they don't want to receive phone calls.
Yeah.
So if they're putting it on there, they know that they're going to get a call.
Because it's a small group, it is a little easier to manage in terms of helping avoid some of those things that the concerns that you mentioned.
Yeah.
But it would take communication from the leader to the person putting their name on that phone list.
And I guess that's my point. When we start a phone list,
mm-hmm.
I really think there needs to be some, hey, here's a few things about this list, especially in an open share group.
Mm-hmm.
In a ministry like the size of Saddleback, we're getting to the, you know, we get to the point where not everybody's going to be there every week. There's going to be new people coming a lot of times, especially like to my group, the men's chem group.
Right.
Those faces are, those faces change all the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, like, I would want a newcomer to know what he was getting into
mm-hmm.
when he put his name on that list.
And not just hand the piece of paper around the circle.
And just say, put your name.
With no explanation.
Right. I mean, there's got to be an explanation of what the list is for, who's
mm-hmm.
going to have that list,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Keeping the list
alive. I think about a really great blog.
Yeah.
My next blog.
That'd be great.
I'll include on my next blog a small script on phone list etiquette.
That'd be great. Yeah. I really do. I mean, I do think it's something that we don't need to, you know, beat to death when we talk about it, but just a simple explanation of here's the phone list, here's how we use it, here's how we ask that you use it if you put your name on the list,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
then we can all know we're on the same page.
Yeah.
And it could avoid a potential, you know, debacle of some sort.
And it's
usually
going to be a gossip situation or
right.
somebody gets disgruntled in the group
right.
and wants to tell everybody else about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm thinking about, we had a woman who was in the one of our abuse groups.
Mm-hmm.
And her number was on the list, and her sponsor's number was on the list, and her group members. Well, she, her and her husband were going through a rough patch, and she got really worried that he was going to find all of their phone numbers
mm-hmm.
and start contacting them
mm-hmm.
and berating them to get to her.
Right.
That as the ministry leader,
mm-hmm.
got me really nervous.
Right.
You know, because and I talked to the person. I talked. You know, we worked it out. Everything's. You know, this is a while ago now, so it's obviously calmed
right.
down. But it was one of those things where I just kind of got
mm-hmm.
that phone list for a second. I went, ooh, how do I feel about this phone list? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
It's
so
one of the potential.
We have to be careful with our tools,
yeah.
how we use them and
uh-huh.
Who we allow have them. You
yeah,
know?
I agree.
All right.
I agree. It's a good question. Good topic.
All right, next question. This is about newcomers group. Are the newcomers... we have Newcomers 101
mm-hmm.
on Friday nights. It's a one-time-only class. They go and they hear a little bit of information about Celebrate Recovery. Then we break them up into groups. This question is asking, after they get the information, do they then go and join an open share group that's already in progress? So would the leader say, okay, all men's chemical, you guys go to this room, women's chemical, you go to this room, or how do those groups work? Bob, will you?
We actually have them break up into two just gender-specific groups right in the newcomers
right.
room that we do it in. We just kind of separate them on each side of the room. Our room's kind of big enough to be able to do that. I would think that if I took them right to a group, that'd be pretty disruptive.
Yeah.
And it really changed the dynamic that was happening in the group.
Mm-hmm.
And in newcomers group, we're just trying to keep it real simple.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just get them into two separate circles, men on one side, women on the other, and we just simply ask, what brought you to Celebrate Recovery?
Mm-hmm.
We ask
mm-hmm.
them to introduce themselves by their name, what brought them to Celebrate Recovery, and we tell them it's okay if you don't want to share, but this is just an opportunity for you to do that. And I find most of the time everybody shares.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually
mm-hmm.
just enough. And then we have sometimes where, I mean, breakthroughs start. Even right there in newcomers group where tears are flowing and one person starts, you know, crying and the next person starts crying and pretty soon the whole group's, because they all needed to really open up.
They needed to, yeah.
And get
yeah.
going. So I think having that moment is perfect, but keep it right there.
Yes.
Rather than go disrupt the dynamic in another group.
I agree. We do the same thing here and encourage them and help them choose what group to go to
the following
Friday night.
Right.
Yeah. And giving them that opportunity to share in those groups gives them, it's a baby step toward sharing in a group for
right.
the first time.
But then they've never done it before.
Especially at the level of honesty that participants at Celebrate Recovery share is unlike any small group that you will ever go to. And so that really gives them an idea of what to expect the following week.
Yeah. Okay. We got a lot of the same kind of question. When people hear about Celebrate Recovery, and we all know this has happened to us, they think it's automatically just for people with drug addiction or alcoholics. So can we come up with some ways that we kind of help neutralize the stigma behind Celebrate Recovery and working the steps and doing that kind of thing?
That's a great question, and I just did our annual survey.
Mm-hmm.
We just finished our one-year anniversary out in Las Vegas, and we did our annual survey right after that. And we got a pretty good return, I think 50 or 60%. And one of the things that we discovered, which was the same here, I believe, is that only about a third of the people coming to Celebrate Recovery had a drug or alcohol addiction.
Hmm.
The other two-thirds were there for somebody else. So we found the same stat in Vegas as you're finding here.
Hmm.
And here's the thing. I had a chance to talk to my senior pastor, just a little hallway chat one day.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about a new series that he's doing. And he wants to target issues that aren't necessarily addictions. And I said, you know what? We just did our survey, and we found that only a third of the people come into recovery are struggling with a drug or alcohol addiction. And he went, I want to hear more about that.
Mm.
And so just putting that bug in
mm-hmm,
his ear,
mm-hmm.
just kind of helping him see that it's for more than just drug and alcohol addiction,
right.
got him thinking down that road. And I think we'll see some great results from that. And so when I hear people and when I talk to people in my office for a variety of different reasons, I let them know that,
mm-hmm.
that fact right there. And that seems to help them realize that, okay, so it's for more than just...
Right, right. I think that building a rapport, relationships within the church staff is very effective. Like that hall room, the hallway chat or the coffee room chat, that type of thing. And eventually for us, our director of our women's ministries approached us wanting to know more about Celebrate Recovery and invited us to go speak at one of her women's groups.
That's awesome.
To share that Celebrate Recovery is just not for the addict and the alcoholic. And as I put a presentation together, I shared about 45 minutes. And the majority of the women, there were about 100 women there, they all said to me after, I had no idea.
Right.
And so I think just building that bridge and building the rapport within your church, especially if you have a staff position at your church and you're a part of Celebrate Recovery, to really be approachable and build rapport and relationships with other staff people so they understand. And second of all, and Johnny will probably talk more about this, is the impact that Life Healing Choices is having on bridging that gap. And that's what drew the women's ministry to us, because she had learned about the book Life Healing Choices. And as a result, she got really curious about Celebrate Recovery.
Hey, Josh.
Well, that was great. Thanks for sharing that. Hi, everybody. This is Josh. Just stepped in to say hi. Is this a Celebrate Recovery podcast?
Yes,
it is.
Oh, my goodness.
Come on in.
I would, but I'm minister of the day today. So.
Is that why you're wearing a suit?
I'm wearing a suit. I have a funeral at 3, too.
Wow, you're busy.
But on a related note, the man died of alcoholism. So I don't know if that fits into your podcast at all. Or
well, it sure
does. It sure shows how life and death this really is.
Yes, it does.
Literally.
There you go.
Hey, Josh, let me ask you a question before you leave the room. Josh, tell me a little bit about how Life Hurts, God Heals works in your ministry.
Really simply, Life Hurts, God Heals meets one night a week for 12 weeks. It's a fantastic program. We saw our highest attendance ever. We've been doing this for quite a while, too.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we ask students that are hurting or have a need, or from little stuff to big stuff, to say, come on in and hang out with us. We work through the steps of the program. It's a student version of Celebrate Recovery, basically. As a high school pastor, I could not endorse it more strongly. I believe in it. I love it. It works. I mean, I've seen kids, their lives are changed through the power of God, but the mm-hmm. program we're using is Life Hurts, God Heals. So love Megan. She is a fantastic author and great communicator. She's done a great job leading that this last year. In fact, this year, for the first time ever, we're actually doing it in the summer. So we've added a summer program for, rather than just during the school year, we'd offer it twice. Now we actually offer it almost year-round. So we're really excited. I have no idea what that's going to look like.
Yeah, hey, that's youth ministry.
You got it. Some good experiments. So,
all right, we'll have fun
there you
show
go.
The day.
Thank you. Sorry about my breath. I just had some delicious tacos, so
that's
I apologize.
Great.
Yeah, thank you.
Enjoy your avocado.
Absolutely.
Be
thankful you're only listening in cyberspace.
Oh, so. My gosh.
All right. Let's move on to the next question. What do you do when no one wants to share in an open share group, I'm saying, or any group, I guess, when the sharing has been open, when no one wants to share, or the other example is when everyone's already shared once and there's still 15, 20 minutes left in the group time. How do you handle that as a leader? Do you just make everybody sit around and be silent?
If there's one person left who hasn't shared and there's a little silence, typically I will say we have plenty of time for one more share, or we have plenty of time for two more people to share. And then literally I only give 30 to 60 seconds, and if those people that are left don't participate, I don't force it.
Okay.
And I simply say, ladies, thank you for your participation tonight, and we're going to go ahead and hand out our sobriety chips, and I start closing the meeting. I don't have any problem with closing an hour-long meeting 15 minutes early. I wrap up just like I would and according to the format, and we all go over to our coffee shop 15 minutes early.
Okay.
And in some cases, we help cut cake if there's if it hasn't already been done. But most times we'll go ahead and just have coffee and get our fellowship going. So don't be shy. If your meeting is ended 45 minutes, that's okay. There's the pitfalls of having people share a second time. And I won't go into all that right now, but there are those pitfalls that can happen.
So it's okay to go ahead and close the group.
Absolutely.
Well, I think
it's
a lot
okay.
of groups feel pressured to take that whole hour and make
yes.
sure they fill up that whole hour with sharing.
Yeah.
Rather than just say, you know what, we're done and close the group. And
I don't know why it is, but I've never heard a second healthy share before. I've been in plenty of meetings where an individual has shared twice, and that second share, it either broke a guideline or it was not healthy at all.
It always turns into crosstalk.
It really does. It really does.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next question. Bob, is it okay to have more than one sponsor in recovery?
More than one sponsor in recovery?
Mm-hmm.
I would say this. It's okay to have more than one sponsor, but if I'm using different sponsors for different aspects of my life, and I'm kind of compartmentalizing my life with those sponsors, I would say that would be dangerous territory. But if everybody knows everything about me, but some sponsors have different experiences that maybe another one doesn't, like let's say I'm alcoholic and have experienced abuse,
mm-hmm.
and I have a sponsor that has had alcoholism but doesn't have abuse, and I have another sponsor that has abuse, then I would say, yeah, they're going to fit two different needs. But if I start using those sponsors to shop for the answers I want to hear,
right.
mm-hmm.
if I start compartmentalizing my life, if I don't allow them completely into my life,
mm-hmm.
Then I would say it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I think what happens a lot is somebody's a part of traditional recovery, and then they come to Celebrate Recovery, and they go, well, I don't want to leave my current sponsor or my old
sure.
sponsor, even though he or she has no desire to come to Celebrate Recovery with
right.
me. You know, and I can understand that. My thing would be if you've completed step three and you've turned your life and your will over to the care of Christ, you need a sponsor who's done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone who is committed to Christ and committed to following Christ is going to give you different advice and speak into your life in a different way than somebody who hasn't made that decision. And for me, as a Christian, I want mature Christians speaking into my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I can't. You know, we always talk about we don't govern these relationships. We don't, we don't really even know who's sponsoring who. But that would be my advice if someone were to come to me and say, "I'm a Christian, my sponsor's not a Christian." I'd say, "You need to get a Christian sponsor."
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
Oh, it's ideal. It's very much ideal to have a Christ-centered. Recovery program, including the relationships that you're pouring your life into in terms of recovery.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. Very much ideal. I think that as an alternative for those who are working with several areas of addiction or compulsive behaviors, it's tough to get direction from three different people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose the sponsor in your primary area of recovery or that area of recovery of what brought you to recovery in the first place and start there with that particular sponsor, and then as you build your accountability team to include those with various other areas of recovery, not that they're going to be giving each other direction or advice, but just the fellowship, just fellowshipping with others that you relate to and identify with is working the program.
Mm.
You know, sharing common experiences and validating feelings, that's working a program. And so it can get pretty overwhelming if you have two or three sponsors who are giving you different assignments, you know, different tasks to do. It can take away from one or the other.
You know, what that reminds me of, Tina, is that I have one sponsor,
mm-hmm.
but I have many accountability partners.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have a sponsor who I call, but I have accountability partners who I also call, and then
mm-hmm.
I speak into my life, and there are vital, important people in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. I actually favor the accountability partner relationship over the sponsor relationship. Mm-hmm. I think
two different relationships.
I think two healthy people make a sponsorship relationship work really well.
Mm-hmm.
I think one unhealthy person, either the sponsor or the sponsee, can make that relationship become codependent very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And we can start to end up getting dependent on our sponsors,
mm-hmm.
and leading a sponsor-centered recovery instead of a Christ-centered recovery. Mm-hmm. And that's not for everyone. I'm speaking to the exception rather than the rule. But mm-hmm. it is another thing that kind of I've seen happen.
Yeah.
You know, whereas accountability partners, men who are in the trenches with me, who are walking through life with me, I just tend to get a much broader scope of insight when I don't just count on one person
to
help me
see
me through this.
Yeah, and encourage other celibate recoveries who are new,
mm-hmm.
and they're young, and there are not that many sponsors available.
There are hardly any, let alone the luxury of having multiple sponsors for one person.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, and so my first couple of years with celibate recovery, I had this incredible accountability team, and Bob Wood and Carrie Wood, I mean, I knew them before they were even married,
mm-hmm.
and we were all each other's accountability partners in terms of our fellowship together. And the first couple of years, I mean, my recovery was very dynamic, and I grew like a weed, and it was only in my third year that I finally secured and found a sponsor that I was willing to take direction from. And that's part of my problem.
I can only imagine how that relationship worked out.
Like people telling me what to do.
Keep in mind, just like anything we do at Sober Recovery, sponsor or accountability partner, all of those relationships need to be same sex.
Right.
That's for your protection, for the other people's protection.
Mm-hmm.
And Tina and I are friends, and Tina adds value to my life. She speaks into things in my life. But Tina is not the person I call when I'm struggling. Tina's not the person I call.
Not the 2 o'clock in the morning person.
She's not the person I call. I call other guys, mm-hmm. you know. And so there's value in learning from the opposite sex. But in this situation, and accountability and sponsorship and pretty much a lot of recovery, the risks outweigh the reward that are there. So
mm-hmm.
I just want to keep that in the front of our minds too.
And there's also going to be times that I outgrow a sponsor.
Sure.
Or a sponsor outgrows me in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kind of move on. You know, some people didn't feel the need to, like, bring closure to that relationship and say we're now not sponsoring sponsee anymore, and that's fine to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's times that I'm just going to outgrow one. I mean, I think about when I kind of moved from my chemical dependency sponsors, and then I started dealing with my sexual addiction,
mm-hmm.
how I had different needs,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
that sponsor was fine and helped me work a lot of those same principles, and it wasn't that much different. But having that like-minded and having that experience, strength, and hope to share specifically related to that issue was extremely helpful for me. It really helped me understand that issue.
Well, that's going to do it for today. I hope you enjoyed this. I love this. I think this is fun stuff. We're going to have the rest of this conversation over the next few episodes, so we'll see you next week.